Good morning. Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams. The future of healthcare in New Mexico is facing a lot of uncertainty as Republican plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act moves through Congress. Nearly half the state's population gets healthcare through Medicaid, and the healthcare industry makes up a big part of our economy. So what would the Republicans' health plan mean for people here? We want to hear from you. The number is 877-899-5866. You can join the conversation on Twitter, where we're live tweeting the program. Our handle is at KUNM News, and you can also email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. Joining us in the studio today are Sarisha Manet of the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty and Dr. Mark Epstein, who is the Chief Medical Officer for the New Mexico Health Connections, and that's, of course, the low-cost insurance provider on the exchange. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so the Republican Repeal and Replace plan, which is the American Health Care Act, it passed the House of Representatives by like two votes last week. It's not law yet. It has to go to the Senate first, but that vote took place before anyone really had a chance to read what was actually in the bill, right? So, I mean, I'm assuming that now you guys have had a little opportunity to parse through it and see what actually got passed through the House. So give us a summary of what we know.
Well, there's just a lot to unpack there, and a lot that changes exactly what the ACA had intended to do, and unwinding some of those opportunities as well. There are, before we get into the features, because one can get into the weeds very quickly, it's worth noting that there's a lot that has to happen through the Senate and back to the House before any true reform happens, any repeal and replace happens. There are a variety of elements that affect not only the Medicaid populations, but also the populations who are getting their insurance through the exchanges nationwide.
Hmm. What about Medicaid, Sarisha?
So like Dr. Epstein was saying, there's a lot in that bill, but one of the most worrisome aspects of the bill is the cuts to Medicaid. There's a huge dramatic restructuring of Medicaid in this bill that would cap federal funding for Medicaid and then cut it for New Mexico in a couple of different ways. And that will mean that Medicaid is going to lose about $800 billion over the next 10 years. You know, there have been some examinations of this bill because, you know, it was actually introduced back in March, and there was a Congressional Budget Office scoring of the bill at the time. And some of those features haven't changed, like the cuts to Medicaid. And at the time, the CBO found that the Medicaid cuts would end up losing health care coverage for 14 million people across the country. So that's a critical component of this bill that I think we all need to be watching for New Mexico, where, you know, 900,000 people here in New Mexico are covered by Medicaid, and we're looking at some huge losses, both in terms of federal funding and possibly people losing health care coverage. Our economy will be impacted. You know, it's a big cut. Beyond Medicaid, there's also cuts to the tax credits that people will get to be able to buy health insurance. That structure is completely changing so that, you know, it's no longer going to be based on your income. It'll be based on other factors like age. And that's going to mean a cut, you know, to people as well, which could make health insurance more unaffordable for folks. There's lots of changes around consumer protections for health insurance. You know, so now states may be allowed to let health insurance companies charge you more if you have a pre-existing condition, or just deny certain services like mental health care or maternity care or newborn coverage. So there's a lot in that bill that, you know, we could talk about.
Well, that's why we're here.
Yeah. And in fact, I'd want to mention, thank you, Sarisha, one of the key things that the ACA brought out, the Affordable Care Act, was there has to be a minimum set of coverage. They called those the essential health benefits. This proposed legislation rolls back that, at least gives it to the states to determine, you know, exactly what is covered can be very different from state to state. And there's no guarantees that, for instance, certain care in one state would be provided coverage for versus in another state or even in a different locale. That means we're rolling back the progress that we made potentially to make sure that people are not buying two what we call thin plans, where they may be very, very inexpensive, but when you get into trouble with a health concern that you may not have anticipated, you may not have that coverage. So the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare as it's popularly known, guaranteed a certain level of coverage of services so that there were no surprises on the back end.
Well, Our representative from the 2nd District, Republican Steve Pierce, he voted for the Republican House health care plan. And he says that Obamacare or the ACA is unstable, it's collapsing, and something has to be done. So he spoke with us before the program. Let's go to that.
Aetna just said yesterday they're not going to participate. One of the biggest, and that's nationwide, one of the biggest Midwestern providers just came out a couple of days ago. They're not going to participate. Another Midwestern provider said that premium is going to go up 100%. And so we're just finding that the basic structure is deeply flawed. The option is to do nothing or try to improve it. The second attempt that the Republicans brought forward, people in New Mexico would see lower premiums. That's the main, I think, concept is let's get things affordable. So we voted yes.
Now, did you have time to read the bill? Because it passed pretty quickly, and the CBO didn't even have time to give an analysis.
The bill was out for a long time. The main structure, all we did is add a couple amendments. I've been tracking and reading it all the way through. I read the MacArthur Amendment. CBO score sometimes takes weeks, so I don't think it was a matter of not having time to read the bill. CBO works at their own pace, and so no, I did read the bill.
And then what particular elements in the bill do you think would be good specifically for us here in New Mexico?
Well, number one, the fact that it's going to lower premiums. We achieved that by splitting off the high risk and the pre-existing conditions. Those go into a separate pool, kind of a wall between them and the everyday person just buying health insurance and as a preventive measure. That was one of the things that was driving the rate so high. Young, healthy people were having to pay for folks with pre-existing conditions. So by splitting those apart and by creating an invisible pool that the federal government will get backstop to, that's what's going to drive the premiums lower for your average everyday person. Then inside that pool, then we put a cap on how much the insurance companies can increase the premiums to that group. So I feel that both sides of the equation are protected.
So his take is he's hearing from constituents. That's Congressman Steve Pierce, who voted for the repeal and replace bill. You know, he says people can't afford Obamacare. You know, the system is in need of is collapsing. Is you know, to use his words. I mean, does he have a point there?
Well, as an emergency physician, you have to assess the patient, right? And the patient, Obamacare, he states is deeply flawed. It's on death's door. In part, yes, there are some places for improvement in Obamacare. Is Obamacare on death's door? Well, by neglect, it's had some troubles. There have been opportunities for the last several years to address some of the flaws. And I guess the question would be, are we at a desperate situation where we need to kill the whole thing and build anew? Or are there some modifications that are needed, that have been needed for a while, that need to be put in place to support the good progress that's been made? I'm of the opinion there are certainly interventions that can be done that wouldn't necessitate proverbially throwing out the baby with the bathwater, much less burning down the whole house.
And costs have gone up, though, right, for premiums?
Yes.
I mean, people in New Mexico, this is a state where a lot of people don't earn a lot of money. That could be a problem.
Indeed, premiums have gone up, and we are concerned about 2018 as we look ahead because of all the uncertainty. And in the health insurance world, uncertainty leads to higher premiums. We would love to see clarification as the step forward. We know in New Mexico that New Mexicans have trouble affording some of the products that are out there. So absolutely, there are opportunities to intervene to bring clarity, but also to make sure that the premiums for insurance are affordable.
877-899-5866 is the number to call if you want to weigh in. You know, Congressman Pierce also said he was confident nobody would be kicked off the Medicaid rolls if the changes went to the Medicaid program during our conversation this morning. Sarisha, I'm looking at a study right now that says there will be, am I reading this right, 250,000 people that could lose coverage according
That's
to
correct.
This study?
That's correct. You know, Congressman Pierce's comments, I think, are quite surprising, you know, given the impact for New Mexico. You know, by all accounts, the Affordable Care Act has been a huge success, you know, for our state. Over 250,000 people gained health care coverage from the Medicaid expansion and also from gaining health insurance through the exchange. That was another, you know, 50,000 people. So overall, 300,000 people gained coverage and our uninsured rate was cut in half. So to repeal the Affordable Care Act, we're looking at, once again, doubling our uninsured rate and some huge losses for New Mexico that I'm surprised he didn't mention that at all. You know, he was really talking about premiums, which, you know, interestingly, you know, when the CBO did its scoring, it didn't score that part. And that's what we've all been kind of waiting for is, you know, how can we pass forward a bill when we don't know what really will happen to premiums, you know, under this bill? Because, I mean, typically when you to cut premiums, the way to do it is to increase deductibles or to cut services, you know, so you're ending up getting less. But, you know, that that's all part of this. You know, the thing that we looked at with a study for Medicaid was we contracted the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Health Policy Center, and Dr. Kelly O'Donnell, an economist, did a study where she looked at the cuts to Medicaid, both in terms of repealing the Medicaid expansion funding, which is one thing that this bill does. It reduces the amount that the state can get for the Medicaid expansion population. And then it also block grants Medicaid, which is basically capping federal funding for Medicaid. And that's problematic because what happens over time is that, you know, the actual, you know, cost for medical care goes up, and then what you're getting from the federal government doesn't keep up with it. So the state ends up taking a lot of these costs. You know, if New Mexico wants to keep coverage for the 250,000 people plus who gained coverage through the Medicaid expansion and for everybody else on Medicaid, including children, people with disabilities, seniors, it would have to pay a lot more under this bill to be able to maintain that coverage. And the study found that it's a lot more, to the tune of approximately $400 million per year. That is a lot of money for New Mexico to have to come up with to be able to maintain Medicaid coverage. And if we're unable to do that, then we're looking at possibly cutting, you know, Medicaid expansion, which means 250,000 people, a quarter million people could lose coverage.
Well, we have a phone call from somebody who interacts with a lot of people who have gotten coverage through Medicaid, and that's Abe Gordon. He's an addiction counselor at Inside Out Recovery in Espanola. Hi, Abe.
Hello, Ed. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
You're dealing with the population there in northern New Mexico who is needing to find treatment for an addiction and who oftentimes have to find a way to pay for that treatment, right? I mean, how important is Medicaid for your clientele, for the people that you work with?
Well, first of all, I just want to thank you for having this conversation, because it's very important that we start looking at and discussing what is about to happen, because there is, for me, there's a lot of hard times feel like it's about to come on, because we deal with, so we're a peer-run drop-in wellness center, and we deal with the addicted and homeless population. And a lot of times, in order for somebody to get better, to be able to get a job, to be able to afford, you know, this insurance, and they need to go into treatment of some sort. And if they lose Medicaid, then it's going to make the process so much more difficult than it already is. We already struggle with getting people into rehabilitation due to the lack of resources, but losing this is just going to make it so much more difficult than it already is. You know, we as a drop-in center, wellness center, we work with Medicaid. All our services are free, but we are listed under the added services with Medicaid, and the fear of losing that is going to just cause so many more problems that I can see. There's already a lot of stress and fear going on in the Medicaid area.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you already hearing a lot of uncertainty from people you work with, from other providers, about what this means? I mean, are you feeling an impact already, even though this bill hasn't passed the Senate?
Yeah, I've been hearing little bits and pieces here and there. I know, like, already Medicaid places are starting to lay people off are working that way. I hear about it. I don't myself know all about this new healthcare act. Therefore, I'm grateful that it's being talked about, because I need to learn more about it and see what my options are going to be and how to help the communities.
Right.
You know, the uncertainty is scary. It's scary for our communities, for our addicted population and people with mental health issues and pre-existing. I mean, me as a recovering addict myself, used to fight with, I mean, I got my life together and still trying to get my hepatitis treatment. I was denied because it was pre-existing. And now I'm on my treatment now because that's obviously changed. But, you know, that's going to be coming up a lot, especially with addiction and mental health.
Well, we got to go to a quick break. Abe, stay on the line with us. We'll be back in a minute. But we're talking about the American Health Care Act, the Republican plan to repeal and replace Obamacare, with Dr. Mark Epstein of New Mexico Health Connections and Sarisha Manet of the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. Short break here, and then we'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
This Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. on the Children's Hour, we're honoring our mothers. Kids can call in and wish their moms Happy Mother's Day live on the air. And we'll have great music, our family events calendar, the KUNM Kids Birthday Club, the Children's Hour, 9 to 10 a.m. every Saturday, right here on KUNM. For the mother and child
reunion. Cynthia Phelps grew up in a family where two of her sisters and her mother all played the violin. In Cynthia's words, "It was way too much E string surrounding me." She escaped by switching to viola. We'll hear Cynthia Phelps play Robert Schumann's Fairy Tales in concert on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is KUNM 89.9, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico. We're back talking about what the Republicans' health care bill would mean for our state. Are you covered by Medicaid? Did you get your coverage during the Medicaid expansion? What would changes in that program mean for you? Or are you a small business owner who's been struggling to provide health coverage to your employees? Call now. The number is 877-899-5866. You can join the conversation on Twitter, where we're live tweeting the program. Our handle there is at KUNM News. And Dr. Epstein, I had to cut you off to go to that break. But what were you hoping to say before we...
Well, I really appreciated Abe's perspectives from Espanol, and he brings up some very crucial points. One of those is simply access to health insurance means access to health care. And there's no way around that. There's a lot of dust in the air in terms of that conversation, but I appreciate that we need to have a conversation that's an adult conversation about accessing health insurance and thus health care. Specifically, folks who have behavioral health issues that are well-controlled end up having better outcomes than those who have behavioral health issues that are poorly controlled. And access to resources can help reduce our total spend as a state on medical issues as well as behavioral health issues, which then helps keep premiums down. So it very much becomes an economic issue to get people coverage, to keep their behavioral health issues well controlled, and thus keep their medical issues under control as well.
We have Patsy Romero on the line with us from Santa Fe, and Patsy is a behavioral health worker in the northern part of the state as well. Hi, Patsy.
Hi. Thanks. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thanks for joining the conversation. We just heard from Abe Gordon up in Espanola, who works at Inside Out, about changes in Medicaid, what that could mean for the people he deals with. And what about you? I mean, you got quite a bunch of experience, I understand, in this field. How important is Medicaid, is health coverage in the behavioral health field, and what are some of the concerns you're feeling right now?
Well, I believe that with Medicaid expansion, it opened the doors for numerous individuals who are having problems or having issues with both mental health substance abuse, children with severe emotional issues. And the we're already in a crisis in New Mexico because of the destruction of the behavioral health services since 2013. But the expansion of Medicaid presents additional problems and challenges, and particularly now with the Affordable Care Act, the possibility of them having issues with pre-existing conditions is just going to further the crisis that we already have in New Mexico. The biggest challenge that we have is that providers and professionals who are trying to provide medical care, behavioral health services of all kinds, are very are afraid of actually doing business in New Mexico because of what happened with the behavioral health issue in 2013.
Yeah, and that was the audit of the or the investigation of all the behavioral health providers for fraud that was later found to have not been true. There was no fraud found. Is that creating some uncertainty or instability? I mean, are there lingering effects from that shakeup of our behavioral health system that are maybe making it more vulnerable to changes that could come through this repeal of the ACA?
Absolutely, the repeal just presents additional problems that we're already facing in New Mexico. And remember, the behavioral health providers provided a safety net for individuals with severe mental illness and chronic substance abuse issues. And those are very important services in order to maintain the stability of the individual in the community, as was previously stated. And the issue of providers being fearful of providing care for Medicaid beneficiaries presents a challenge in New Mexico. We've got professionals that don't want to take on Medicaid patients because they're afraid of what happened to the behavioral health providers in 2013. So Senator Papin made an effort to bring about a due process bill that was welcomed and received bipartisan support at this last legislative session, and the governor vetoed that particular legislation. But that would have opened the doors for all providers, not just behavioral health providers, but medical providers, dentists. We hear from them all the time, from all different disciplines that are trying to provide services in New Mexico, and there's this continued fear that they will not have due process should a question about billing occur. But it's really hurting our communities, and there are no services for behavioral health that we had in 2013. And recently we just heard that down in the southern part of the state, La Clinica de Familia is really cutting down on behavioral health services that are very, very critical to the severely emotionally disturbed children and to the severely, to individuals with severe mental illness.
Surely the American Healthcare Act, the replacement bill, took some of this into account, right? I mean, there has to be elements in there to deal with some of these shortfalls that Patsy is talking about. Right? Anybody? I'm looking at a bunch of them.
Well, we're not. Go ahead, Patsy.
Go ahead.
I'm just concerned that based on the language that we're hearing, and again, it's still debatable and new. I believe it's just going to present additional problems. You know, we thought that parity was really going to increase the ability for individuals with mental illness and substance abuse issues to receive the care that they needed. But when you're throwing in pre-existing conditions and you're and behavioral health and all services for the disability community, not just those with behavioral health needs, is just going to increase. And I think the challenges are just going to be enormous.
Well, thanks for your call, Patsy. Sarisha, you wanted to add something to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the issues that was brought up there is the strain that this bill could really pose to our entire healthcare system. And, you know, one thing that I, you know, wanted to mention was that in the study that was done around the Medicaid, you know, reductions, you know, it found that the impact on New Mexico would not just impact people who would lose health care coverage, but it would impact our entire health care system because Medicaid supports so many jobs in New Mexico. Like right now, Medicaid is supporting over 50,000 jobs in the state. And if we end up losing, you know, federal funding for Medicaid, then that's really going to stress our provider system. You know, this report found that if we roll back Medicaid expansion, then we could be losing up to 30,000 jobs in New Mexico. So imagine, you know, how that's going to feel for healthcare providers, you know, struggling with a high uninsured population again, you know, losing jobs in the healthcare system and trying to provide, you know, mental health services along with all the other, you know, healthcare services in our community.
And I assume that people losing those jobs that might have employer coverage right now would end up needing to buy insurance on the exchange, and maybe there could be some pressure there, huh?
Exactly. There's challenges for premium, for covering those premiums there as well. Well, and in fact, to Patsy's point, if you're pulling roughly $880 billion nationwide out of Medicaid funding, that impacts care directly. That impacts care directly. That, those are resources. Those are salaries of professionals, and that's infrastructure.
$880 billion sounds like a crazy amount of money, but I mean, it's kind of, I mean, how much is it though? Is that, I don't know what the entire budget for Medicaid is. I mean, how much is $880 billion, you know, when you look at it in context of the whole program? Medicaid costs a lot.
You know, I don't have the figures of the national amount that's spent on Medicaid, but the Congressional Budget Office reports estimated that it was about a 15% to 25% reduction in Medicaid, you know, spending. For New Mexico, we would lose $11 billion over 10 years. It's a little over $1 billion over each year, which is about, you know, currently our Medicaid program spent, we get $4.5 billion from the federal government. So that's, you know, about a 20% reduction.
Well, we want to hear from you. What do you think needs to change in our healthcare system? The number to call is 877-899-5866. And let's go to the phones. We have Dave calling from Edgewood. Hi, Dave. Thanks for your call.
Hi. One of the things that I've heard on NPR as the American Healthcare Replacement Act is moving forward is that there's a lesser-known piece of that, which is a loophole that's part of the Replacement Act that would allow either, and this is where I'm a little unsure, either the states or the healthcare providers, possibly both, to opt out of paying for highly expensive drugs that would be used in situations for arthritis, hep C, HIV, cancer, that they could possibly, this loophole would allow them to essentially, what it sounds like to me, is discriminate against folks with pre-existing conditions by disallowing use of the medications that these folks are using.
Huh. I haven't heard of that loophole, but Dr. Epstein, you probably know.
Well, that's not a loophole that I'm familiar with, but perhaps the caller's referring to the opportunity with this new legislation for states to determine what they cover and what health insurance products are out there. So it enables insurers to potentially discriminate in terms of what they sell and what's covered, which could exclude certain conditions that are covered today under Obamacare. And that would include the drugs that go along with that and other treatment modalities, because there are some of these drugs are very expensive, but they're targeted for certain conditions like inflammatory conditions or cancer and such. So today, under Obamacare, there's a minimum set of benefits that have to be covered. Tomorrow, under this new legislation, if it goes through, those guarantees may not be there.
Mm. Well, we have another guest in studio, Kathleen Chavez, here. She is Albuquerque native, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for joining us. You got coverage from the Medicaid expansion.
I did, yes.
Tell us your story.
Hi. So my name is Kathleen, and I'm a single mom. I'm also a survivor of domestic violence. And I run my own business at home. I'm a professional fashion designer. And it's funny because I do get covered under the Medicaid expansion, but because my income fluctuates so much, depending on where I'm at and when I, you know, turn in my paperwork, it's possible sometimes I can just be covered under traditional Medicaid or under the expansion, depending on where my income is at that moment. But it's nice to really have that little bit of leeway to be able to still be covered as my business grows. And that's, of course, what I'm trying to do is grow my business to get to the point where I don't necessarily need help with Medicaid. But being a single mom, my son also has some conditions that need to be covered medically. He has sensory processing disorder. He gets occupational and speech therapy. He's had surgery on his eyes. He has glasses. He's had orthodontic work. I myself have some pre-existing conditions. I have migraines. I've gotten physical therapy for an injury I had in my shoulder that got just gets re-inflamed sometimes with the work that I do. So it's nice right now that we're covered in this, what's happening right now with the new bill that's going to pass, that the cuts to Medicaid, to me, from everything I've researched and looked at, are devastating. And as somebody who is covered under Medicaid, it's a little scary to wonder what's going to happen. As you guys were discussing, it's possible that it's just going to affect the amount of coverage that we get. I worry if something like occupational therapy is not going to be considered necessary, because maybe they'll consider the speech necessary but not occupational for my son. And it's a little scary because I just don't know where we're going with things now. And as my income does expand, which, you know, the goal is always to have your income expand so you don't necessarily need help, but it's nice to have help when it's there and when you're trying so hard to be a member of society and, you know, put your in and do good. It's nice to have some help for health insurance. So I just worry that if this does pass and I'm under an income level that would qualify under the Medicaid expansion, that we'll just get our insurance taken away from us. And then I absolutely can't afford it. I can't afford insurance on the market, I don't believe, with the income I make right now. So it's a little scary.
So what would your plan be if you were to, if, you know, they were to roll back the Medicaid expansion and you were to lose coverage? I mean, what would that mean for you? What would you do?
I don't know. I've talked to my parents and said, well, what can we do if we get our insurance taken away, or if they deem certain things unnecessary, like occupational therapy? And the only thing I can think of as somebody who does run a business is like, okay, I got to somehow do more work. I got to somehow make more income so I can afford it. And it's so stressful being a single parent and thinking, I already work so much. I mean, I work from home, so I work all day long. I take my son to all his activities at night, and then I come home and I work all through the night sometimes. And to me, it's like there's not even enough hours in the day to try to earn more money. So what's my other option? I quit doing the job I've been doing professionally for many, many, many years. I go get a job somewhere that does offer health insurance, and then I'm saddled with childcare costs and probably have to take my son out of some activities depending on what my work hours are, and I don't get as much time with him. It's just, it's a real catch-22. You know, I work at home, so I'm available for him because I am a single parent. So it's one or the other. Then I have to go get a job somewhere else that is not what I have a degree in and it's not what my career is. And or we stand the chance to lose our insurance or lose some of our benefits. And it just puts us in a position that's, it feels like it's, there's almost no option, you know.
Sirisha Manet, we were talking earlier about Robert Wood Johnson report that said over 265,000 New Mexicans who gained coverage through the expansion could be affected by this. Are these mostly, you know, working people like Kathleen, mm-hmm. who, you know, maybe have kids to take care of? Or, I mean, who are we talking about?
So the Medicaid expansion actually filled a gap in Medicaid at the time. You know, before we had the Medicaid expansion, Medicaid primarily covered children, people with disabilities, seniors, and very, very low-income parents. So it wasn't even covering, you know, people who were living in poverty, including individuals who are homeless, you know, folks who are near poverty, folks who are making minimum wage, working folks. And so the expansion actually, you know, covers everyone who is living in poverty or near poverty and low-income workers, too. So it's been important for minimum wage workers, for, you know, people who are starting businesses, for students, and as well as folks who are, you know, part-time workers, homeless individuals, you know, folks who are big, you know, just trying to get back on their feet.
And can I add one other?
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the other options that you might be faced with is, and we're hearing this rhetoric out there, which is just frankly mythical, that you could get your care in the emergency room if you lose coverage. We all know in our heart of hearts, and as an emergency physician, I know at a practical level, that's just not true. Good chronic care management does not happen in an emergency room. Our emergency rooms are outstanding. They're designed to treat the acute emergency, but not ongoing chronic care. So any rhetoric out there saying, oh, it'll be okay, we have this backstop, is really mythical.
You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show live from the University of New Mexico. We're talking about the Republican plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act and what changing the law means for us here in New Mexico. We want to hear from you. What do you think needs to change in our healthcare system? The number to call is 877-899-5866. That's 877-899-5866. Or you can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org or tweet at KUNM News. We're going to take a short break and then we'll be back to take some calls.
Honda, Buick, Pontiac, Ford, Toyota, Cadillac, Subaru, and Volvo, too. They become a part of you. When they've brought you many miles, when they've brought you many smiles, it's not as hard to let them go when it's more than just a tow. You can do some good with them. Donate to KUNM. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227. Next best thing to old car heaven. Well, I got me a car.
The National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Native Women and Girls is this Friday. We're taking the next hour of Native America Calling to explore what happens in the family, in the tribal community, and in the police station when someone goes missing. We'll talk about possible solutions and ways you can help. We hope you'll join us.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams, reporter for Public Health New Mexico, a KUNM reporting project providing in-depth investigative coverage of public health and the impacts of poverty in our state. Give us a ring, 877-899-5866, or you can also send us an email at callinshow@kunm.org or post comments to our Facebook page. Now, Kathleen, you were talking a little bit before the break about how your son has you know, is in occupational therapy and has some conditions that he needs to work on that's covered through the Medicaid expansion.
Yes.
There's a lot of concern about this pre-existing condition issue. That's mostly for the exchange, right? I mean, would changing, like, would people who are on Medicaid, I guess, be affected by the pre-existing condition requirement being taken away? Can you clarify that?
So Medicaid patients would not be affected by the pre-existing conditions being taken away. That's primarily something that affects people with health insurance. But this idea that, you know, health insurance would no longer have to cover the essential services certainly could affect Medicaid. You know, the state could certainly make a decision to no longer cover certain services that they're required to cover right now. I mean, mental health is one of the big areas that I think we should, you know, be looking out for, you know, as a possible service that could be reduced.
And with a reduction in funds coming in, it'd be natural to turn to say, well, we're going to have to reduce the services provided.
Right.
Let's go to the phones. John is on the line with us. John's calling from Edgewood. John, thanks for your call.
Hello?
Hi. John, can you...
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear us? John, if you can hear me, give us a call back, and we're trying to get you back on the line, but we're having some connectivity issues. We will go to Nat, who is in calling from Santa Fe. Nat?
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for doing the show on this important subject.
What's
one
on
of the
mind?
Things that I consider and a number of other entities do is as we have more insecurity in terms of healthcare, in terms of behavioral healthcare, in terms of food insecurity, in terms of housing.
Yeah.
Now
we're going to have to put you on hold because we cannot understand you, unfortunately, but we won't lose you. We want to hear what you have to say. So bear with us and we'll sort this connection out. We'll go to another phone call in the meanwhile. Demi on the phone from Bernalillo.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, Demi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
My question is on universal health care and single payer. And it seems like there's a pretty much of a consensus among frontline providers that that's the way to go. And yet it doesn't seem to be really gaining any traction. I realize that with the Republican-controlled Congress. But I'd just like to get the panel's input. I know that when I've approached our legislators who, for the most part, are pretty good on, have been in opposition to the HCA, they say that the infrastructure is not in place and it can't be done. And I'd like to get your input on, where that is and what steps could be taken to make that happen.
Sure. So single payer, that's a debate that's been going on since the beginning of the ACA. And we started having this debate, like 2008 or something. and it hasn't worked out. I mean, would that be something that could be helpful? How would we get there? What's your answer to Demi's question?
Well, there certainly are a lot of options to get to that solution. I would like to put on the table as well, along with single payer, single administrator, which is a slightly different program where you have private entities, but public authority setting what pricing is and what coverage is. And they're saying, here's the rules of the game, and letting the private sector compete, which has been a big mantra to have good competition in that space. So back to the single payer, that's where the government would say we're setting rates and we are the only payer for that care. There seems to be a lot of a debate around that, but there's a lot of inertia as well in terms of entities that want to protect the current system, that don't want to change what some would call the free market system of healthcare today.
Well, I doubt that single payer is going to come out of the Senate version of the American Health Care Act. But, do you see some potential movement towards that possible? I mean, I know this isn't a political analysis we're talking right now, but go ahead.
You know, I think in the short term, that seems unlikely just because of the hold that the private insurance market has, amongst our policy, decision world. But, one thing to keep in mind is that we have two public health insurance programs now. We have Medicare and Medicaid, and single payer is basically a Medicare for all program. This bill is moving in the opposite direction. While you have most Americans saying they want a single payer system, that they would support something like that, we have our Congress moving in the exact opposite direction. It's interesting that President Trump on the campaign trail promised to folks that he wouldn't cut Medicaid or Medicare and promised universal access. And yet here we are now looking at major cuts to Medicaid, certainly, and possibly Medicare as well. And all of this is being done, I would just remind folks, in order to be able to give tax cuts, which primarily are affecting very wealthy people. So when you're taking all of this funding out of the healthcare system and out of our public health insurance programs like Medicare and Medicaid, that's going to be difficult, to move towards a single payer system. But certainly there's a lot of movement amongst the public, to wanting a system like that. And, I, for one, would argue that that is ultimately the only system that's going to eventually save costs for us and reduce costs and get universal coverage.
And the conversation that's not happening is as Sarisha points out, we're moving towards more and more towards a free market system with this new legislation, is with the free market, there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. And we are too compassionate of a country to let losers lose when it comes to health care. So we need to have a really clear conversation, again, an adult conversation about if we are moving towards more of a free market system, what's the impact on the losers and how are we going to look out for each other in that scenario?
877-899-5866 is the number to call. On the line from Santa Fe right now, we have Gene Varela. Gene is the state director of the AARP New Mexico. Hi, Gene.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. The AARP has been a really vocal voice in opposition to the Republicans' health plan to repeal and replace. So what are the concerns you have about changing the Affordable Care Act and what it could mean for older New Mexicans?
Well, I think there's several areas. One is that in the long run, based on our analysis of the proposals, this would increase costs and risks for older Americans, older New Mexicans. You know, it gives tax breaks to big drug and health insurance companies, and then at the same time allows them to charge older Americans a higher amount for premiums by increasing that the age ratio fee base from a 3-to-1 to a 5-to-1. Now you're putting the burden on people 50 to 64 year old.
And that would be like, under the Affordable Care Act, you can't charge an older person three times what you would charge a healthy young person, right?
No more than three times.
And now that's changing to five times?
Yes. And so we're seeing that could increase premiums for individuals 50 to 64 by quite a bit. The other thing, and you've talked about this already in the program, the impact on Medicaid going to a limited cap on funding for the state then puts the burden on the state. And we're already struggling in New Mexico. So the question is, how do we cover that? And would probably result in losing coverage as well as benefits and services throughout the state. I think our concern is, you know, what is it you're really trying to accomplish here? Are you trying to give breaks to drug companies and insurance companies so that they will then provide increased benefits, or are you actually going to maintain coverage for individuals who are already dependent, as many individuals have been talking to you about, on these benefits?
Well, stay on the line with us, Gene, but I do want to go to something that you just touched on, which is, you know, the state is now going to have a lot of control about how they budget, right, for health care under this new bill. And I guess the concern is that people, you know, we're in a crisis right now financially in the state, and we have to balance the budget. So now the legislators are going to have all these new options to save money by cutting benefits. I mean, is that accurate, and is that a real concern? I mean,
I think we're already, and those of you that have been involved, we're already seeing the state having to look at ways to cut back expenses because they're having trouble meeting the current budget under Medicaid. And so we're already having discussions, and they've already increased decreased payments to providers. They are looking at co-pays for individuals who are on Medicaid. So, you know, what happens when you now put a cap on the funding to the state? If we want to maintain the coverage in the state, the burden falls on us and the taxpayers in New Mexico to fund that. So, you know, when you have that choice and you have limited revenues, you're going to have to look at how you limit. And having options to expand, I mean, you can provide all kinds of waivers, but if you don't have the revenues, that doesn't expand your coverage. It means that you won't go for those waivers. You'll limit your coverage.
And Kathleen in studio with us is you're starting your own business, and it sounds like we're going to be, Gene's saying we're going to have to rely on more tax revenue, but I think what you were saying is if you take your Medicaid away, then how are you going to work, right, and provide that tax revenue?
Yeah.
Like kind of a catch-22.
Yeah, I mean, being able to go to the doctor when I need to, take my son to the doctor when I need to, stay healthy, does keep me as a productive worker. And I think, you know, anybody who's ever studied the healthcare system knows that the healthier people are, the more productive they are. So, I worry exactly what he was just talking about, too. And I talked about that a little earlier. What do? If they cut the benefits to our state for Medicaid, what are some options here? They either start charging a copay or they cut down on benefits. And, you know, for somebody who's in a position right now who already necessarily at certain times can't even afford a large copay, I would be affected either way. I get concerned, and I do wonder, how do I continue being productive and trying to grow my business if I'm not able to keep my own health up or my own son's health up?
And that really puts a fine point on what I find completely offensive, the comment that we heard yesterday from Orrin Hatch, that folks on Medicaid are on the dole. I mean, Kathleen, you're telling a story of doing everything possible to be a productive economic driver in your community, and here you're getting rocks thrown at you. So it's, I find that rhetoric challenging, and I think, again, an adult conversation about what services need to be covered, and not characterizing folks as not truly representing that they're doing their best to get by.
I'm going to add to that, too, that New Mexico has been struggling with one of the highest unemployment rates in the entire nation, too. And so, you know, it's tough. It's tough out there for folks to be able to make ends meet. And so Medicaid has been an incredible lifeline, I think, for people to be able to get the coverage that they need. You know, when we're talking about the costs that will be shifted to the state, you know, $400 million is a tremendous amount. You know, it's not just about cutting benefits, you know, from coverage. It's about cutting people off, you know, altogether in terms of just losing coverage from Medicaid. You know, we're talking 250,000 people who could end up losing their coverage because of these shortfalls. You know, the state can do everything it can to mitigate that, to try to minimize the coverage, but that's a pretty steep amount to have to come up with.
We only have a few minutes left, so let's get to some phone calls that have been waiting. Nat is back on the line with us, calling from Santa Fe. Nat, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, that sounds much better. Thanks. Okay, go ahead with your question. We couldn't hear you last time.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having the show and covering the topic. What I want to just touch on is kind of the elephant in the room. We have such an increasing rate of crime, and nobody wants to put, well, our state government doesn't really want to put, leadership doesn't want to put two and two together, that when you took away the behavioral health through the credible allegations of fraud, which were just allegations and turned out to not be credible, we have this trickle-down effect of increased crime. We have increased food insecurity as a problem in our state. All of these are just going to ball up and create even more crime. So just addressing that question of, you know, what are we really looking at in terms of the increased crime, the increased child abuse, the increased dangers? I want to touch on that, but I'm not going to take time because you only have a couple more minutes.
Okay. I mean, is there a correlation between healthcare and crime and that kind of thing?
I'm going to take a little different angle on it. There's an interweaving of a lot of different things. If you don't have access to healthcare, how do you get the funds to cover when you do have an incident that requires a lot of costs? So how do you address that? So you're going to look for ways to cover those costs or get the money, whether it means doing illegal things or whether it means going to parents and grandparents and borrowing money and putting the burden on other members of the family. The other is that, you know, we're a state that has small businesses. We've been looking at the whole issue of saving for retirement. 62% of employees in the state have no access to any kind of savings for retirement except Social Security, and I suspect the numbers are pretty close to access to some kind of employee-sponsored health care program. So now you've got these smaller businesses who are trying to operate in the state and keep their employees and have had no way to provide the health care to protect their employees. So you impact the economy, you impact a lot of other issues when you're talking about access to health care.
We have a listener comment that says it seems like wealthy people get a better deal than the Republicans' plan while lower income people lose more. And then I want to hear from Governor Susana Martinez, who wrote an editorial yesterday in the Journal the Journal reported yesterday that Governor Martinez is not weighing in yet on the Republicans' health care plan. She said she thinks that is premature, but that she supports changes that would lower premiums but still take care of the most vulnerable people in the state. I think everyone would like to lower premiums and take care of the most vulnerable people in the state, but, I mean, what's your response to that? Is that a goal that we can reach given the current bill, given where we are?
I don't think there's any way we can reach that goal given the current bill. You know, this bill is disastrous for New Mexico, especially for Medicaid and for the most vulnerable people in New Mexico. And, you know, I'll just point out that New Mexicans don't support that. You know, we pulled this issue earlier on in the year and found that 3 out of 4 people don't support reducing funding for Medicaid. You know, it's a program that people here in New Mexico really value. It's important to us. And, you know, I hope that our governor comes out and says something about this. You know, she made the decision to expand Medicaid, you know, in New Mexico. So I hope that she protects that decision and defends it.
Oh, we're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we are out of time. But if you missed part of this program or want to hear it again, you can find it and past episodes on our website, KUNM.org. We're also podcasting the show on iTunes. Marino Spencer engineered the program today. Sarah Trujillo answered the phones. Anna Landy was live tweeting the show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the McCune Charitable Foundation. Find out more online at publichealthnm.org. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening.